Hello, and welcome to the Burning Issue podcast. I'm Luke Walsh, the editor of the news website endswasteandbioenergy.com, and in this podcast, I'm looking at the energy recovery sector in the UK, covering how it has developed, where it is now, and what it will look like in the future. For this episode, I'm joined by Ian Lester, who is a partner at the UK arm of global business insurance services provider Gallagher. All right, so I will admit it that insurance, alongside stuff like accountancy, is perhaps not the most important parts of business deals which make headlines. But bear with me, because it's actually a major issue for how the future of the UK's waste management infrastructure will be developed. In the waste market, which is known as a hard market in terms of insurance, some operators have even been forced to run facilities without cover due to the cost of premiums. While, at the same time, the end of PFI deals means plants coming back into local authority ownership, which could also leave councils facing big bills to overhaul older plants or even heavy insurance quotes. So to understand it a bit more, let's hear what Ian has to say. Hi, Ian, and thank you for joining me.
Hi, Luke, and thank you for inviting me.
I've just explained a bit about what you do, but in your own words, would you be able to say how you work with the waste and bioenergy sector?
Yes, very much. So Gallagher's is a long-established insurance brokers originating from the US, but the UK business is again from another long-standing UK insurance broker. Our expertise in the sector have grown steadily. We've come from a construction background, constructing traditional power in some of our members' long-term history. In fact, we've got one instance where, and my colleague won't appreciate me reminding everyone of this, but we've actually looked at the replacement work for an EFW plant that he worked on in the 90s. We've got some history in the sector. We very rapidly developed an operational offering more to meet client demands. We were working with a number of clients who were struggling to find coverage for their plants once they went operational. And we had the capabilities and availability to actually offer that service and began to expand and expand to a point where we not only take on construction plants and take them into operation and continue to insure them, we actually now will target and work with purely operational clients and have started to build a portfolio of pure operational clients who have not been previously our construction clients. In that offering, the what I would call the cradle to grave or full life cycle insurance offering is fairly unique. So traditionally, most bioenergy projects in the UK are going to find insurance down two routes. Either they're going to go to a general insurance broker, more of your sort of high street insurance broker, who, while they will handle all your insurance matters, they will be using various different insurance brokers called wholesale brokers to secure specialist covers. Alternatively, you're talking to a specialist insurance broker, and in most cases, if not all at the moment, you're going to first talk to a construction insurance broker. They'll place your construction program. When the project reaches operation, either in the first or second years, you then get transferred over to an operational insurance broker who specialises in bioenergy. And the problem there is that sometimes there is some disjoint between those two, some different service standards and just different market sizes. And we bridge that gap and we offer service to our client both from first commercial development through, technically speaking, to decommissioning.
Ah, so you literally cover everything. Well, I think I'll have to pick up on some of those points as we go through this. But I think if we can just start with insurance costs in general, everyone has to deal with it. And most people feel costs are increasing in terms of what they deal with regularly, like household and vehicle insurance. But it's going up for the waste sector as well, but possibly for different reasons. Perhaps you could explain a bit more about that.
I would say that ultimately the reason at a high level is the same. Risk and claims increasing results in costs of insurance increasing. However, yes, there is a very complex nature with EFW and bioenergy in general. Prices have always been much higher than conventional power generation, if anybody's been involved in, for example, gas peaker plants that were popular a few years ago, or conventional power projects, so gas combined cycle turbines, coal, etc. Those prices are very different, and it's driven primarily by the feedstock that's being used in these processes and plants. Waste is a non-homogeneous product. You can find all sorts of nasties in there, from the gas bottles to, we've all heard the stories in this sector, because I'm sure, like most people, I've asked the question, what's the weirdest thing you found in there? And a case of hand grenades is definitely sits quite high on that front. So yeah, it's partly driven by that. The loss experience of the sector has been poor. The perception of the sector is equally poor for that reason, because unfortunately insurers are just like anybody else. If they're reading the paper and they see that there's been a big loss in on an EFW plant, they are going to react in a similar vein as you and I would. Oh, that looks bad. And that's going to impact how they look at writing this business on the when the next project comes through the door. And yeah, we've continued to see a poor loss experience in the sector. So 2023 was a very bad year for fires. I think probably the most prominent ones would be in the Netherlands and in Florida last year. But there were a number of smaller fires that occurred in Europe as well. And we, of course, have our own fire experience. Now, in the UK, a couple of years ago, things were very bad and the insurance market snapped back and began to put a lot of restrictions on the amount of cover they were willing to give. As a result, plants either upgraded their systems or they didn't have insurance. And I would say in my experience, so I am very active at site. I do attend a lot of the insurer surveys. And in this sector, most plants are surveyed annually. There's no cyclical nature to it. It's annual. And what we're seeing now is where a fire might occur and the fire brigade would need to be called, a long period of interruption would occur because of the fire. Something that we saw probably more of in around 2019, 2020. That is when market conditions were probably at their worst for insurance. And, you know, there simply wasn't capacity for certain plants. There is very limited capacity, so when I talk about capacity, I mean the number of insurers who are willing to write bioenergy risks. It's a very small market. It does make my job a little bit easier because I have a small group of people who I need to go to try and find insurance, but unfortunately it means market competition is very poor. And if a certain plant has a characteristic which makes it particularly challenging to insurers, a bad loss record, even where plants have actually taken all the steps post-loss to mitigate that risk in future, that loss will always be considered, will always taint that plant for years to come.
That makes a lot of sense to me. So I think that is how you've explained it in the past, as the insurance market being a hard market in terms of energy from waste and other waste sectors. But can you explain a bit more about what the hard market means, and is it likely to change in the near future?
When insurers and insurance brokers talk about a hard market, they're talking about a marketplace for insurance where there are limited sellers of insurance, i.e. insurance companies. This causes pricing to go up and coverage to drop down because there's less competition. So the insurers are able to improve their commercial positions, and that's achieved through higher pricing and lower coverage. Traditionally, this is a cyclical process. What happens is that the high prices and low coverage entice a few new insurers into the sector who start writing it. This creates competition, and eventually we enter into a soft market situation. Soft market situation, you have a large number of insurers participating, creating competition, and this drives down price and increases coverage because more people are competing for the risks that are available. It's always been a very unique marketplace, but we definitely did see a significant deterioration in cover around 2019-2020. A lot of the projects and facilities that had previously been able to get insurance suddenly found they couldn't get insurance. And everybody's terms and conditions got a lot tighter because the sort of global pain from insurance losses had begun to bite. So when the rest of the market effectively started to harden, conditions in the bioenergy world got even worse effectively. And that's when we probably had our most challenging time in the sort of 19s and 20s when coverage was particularly restrictive. You know, from our approach, dealing with a hard market, from a bioenergy perspective, we've been dealing with it for a long time. And you know, very much, it's a technical approach. It's understanding your risk, understanding where the concerns are, and dealing with them. So we found, over the period, we found a number of solutions, but we've always found that actually having a technical understanding of plants, building your evidence to back up why your plant doesn't have this particular problem or has managed this particular risk is the way to building back cover. And it's something that we've experienced with a number of our clients where facilities may have not been quite up to the fire safety standards that people were looking for, or the technical component of the project, i.e. the technology they were using, was of a nature where insurers suddenly lost confidence in it, and we had to again persuade over a number of years and renewals that the insurers were actually insuring a safe risk and could slowly give back cover. And I would say that while we're not in a soft market, the hard market has softened to an extent. We're not seeing any particular big changes in the insurance market. So the what we call the lead insurers, so these are the insurers who put down the largest capacity on a placement. Most of the insurances in the bioenergy sector are not like with your car or home insurance, where you have one insurer and that's it. That insurer writes your whole risk and that's who your policy comes from. Most of these placements are actually placed with multiple insurers, sometimes between 10 to 15 insurers participating on one plant. The lead insurers are the insurers who take the largest share. They are also the insurer who dictates the pricing and the coverage, although there is quite a lot of room for manoeuvre in the smaller lines because the market is so hard. And you do find that further down the pecking order, small insurers will still be seeking to improve their position through exercising the fact that the market is particularly tough. It's ultimately going to continue to be hard. I don't think that we will ever see a particular softening of the market to a point where we see very large swings in terms of coverage and premium. But I think we will see step-by-step improvements as more people get comfortable with writing these risks. We're going to see a return of coverages. We're going to see a minor improvement on premium. But unfortunately, the sector is still considered very, very high risk.
Now, that makes a lot of sense to me. And I'd like to draw a couple of threads together that we've talked about, because you've talked about your colleagues insuring plants in the 90s. And there's those older plants that were built under PFI deals and things like that, that are now coming back into local authority ownership. So everyone's heard about local authorities' issues with financing at the moment. So they're suddenly looking at what they do with this plant. I guess you'd say the first thing they should do is come and speak to you. But how does a local authority deal with a big asset that probably a lot of the officers there weren't around when the time that it was initially put in place?
It's a really interesting question. It's actually something we have dealt with now on a few occasions where PFI deals are either being renegotiated or they've come to an end. The PFI question is very complex. I guess we've kind of got to go back a little bit to look at how those PFI deals place their insurances before. In most cases, the FM provider, the PFI company, however we want to talk about it, they would be responsible for placing those insurances. And usually that meant that insurances were procured through the O&M contractor. Now, they had a favourable position to buy insurance. Either they had a large portfolio of existing non-bioenergy facilities, so with various PFI companies, it might be infrastructure, it might be schools and hospitals, and the bioenergy plant could be dropped into that mix, and the law of big numbers meant that the insurances were straightforward to procure. Or they were large contractors with large contracting businesses, and simply they could go to their corporate insurers, who were not specialist power insurers. They might be property insurers, they might be contracting insurers, and again, the law of big numbers meant that they could get the insurances for these plants and move on. At the same time, you've got an insurer that's focused on delivering a service to the contractor, not to the owner. So you've got a position where a plant is insured year in, year out to the benefit of the contractor. Now, obviously, the authority does have coverage under the policy, and the policy is there to reinstate that property. But there are lots of little fringe elements to that policy that are tweaked in the favour of the contractor, because ultimately the insurer is providing a service to that contractor. They're interested in picking up their wider business. So perhaps that insurer is going to either not have the experience or be willing to pull up the contractor in the same way that more specialist insurance markets will do. Now, unfortunately, this means when it comes time to buy insurance, the authority who have taken over these plants are now responsible for buying that insurance. Now, the challenges there for them are pretty unique. Whereas a commercial operator of plants that are 20, 25 years old are looking down at their asset, they're looking at final depreciation and end-of-life cover rather than the same interest that an authority might be looking at. An authority's concern is with disposing of the waste from their local area. They don't really have another option. Whereas a commercial operator can say, right, well, you know, the plant's reached the end of its life, I've paid off my debts, I've run the plant as long as I can commercially do so, I'm going to end operating it now and that's it. An authority doesn't necessarily really have that option. They need to dispose of their waste, and the costs of landfill or paying gate fees at another EFW facility can be crippling. The municipalities need to keep running these facilities, and at the same time, they also need to insure them. Now, every authority is unique in how they procure insurances, but I would say quite often municipalities will insure their assets through specialist property markets. So the sort of equivalent of Zurich Municipal, which is a specialist insurer specialising in local authority and public housing. Now, they traditionally will not look at energy from waste facilities, waste management facilities, sometimes, but usually not. And those traditional insurers that most authorities would go to are not covering their risk. So unfortunately, those authorities have one route to insurance, which is going to the power generation insurance market. So the operational insurers who cover power stations. Now, these could be power stations as big as Drax, portfolios of power stations like RWE, SSE, etc. So we're talking about assets that run into billions of pounds. They will also look at smaller facilities, so Everos, your Infiniums, and they will look at standalone plants as well. However, the problem for the municipalities is they are now entering a market where they are very, very uncompetitive. They are dealing with an old plant which hasn't been maintained in terms of risk engineering to a level where the power market might be happy, because if you recall, we've been talking about these plants being insured for years by property insurers, contractors insurers, corporate insurers that are not specialist in the energy world. So suddenly the municipalities are left with a facility that's perhaps not up to the current standards of risk engineering, i.e. protecting against the potential loss occurring. They've got to now try and find that solution. Coming back to your question, do they get the O&M contractor to place that insurance for them? I would say probably in most cases, the O&M contractor is not going to take on that risk. We have seen in the past that some O&M contractors are beginning to push back or go back to uninsurability clauses within their original contracts because the cost of insurance has gone up so much. What we see in the non-PFI world is that O&M contractors no longer offer insurance. In fact, I've worked on a few cases where the O&M contractor has effectively pulled their insurance near enough overnight, and the owner of the plant, and these were commercial facilities, I'm up with that, but the owner of the plant basically had to scramble to find insurance at the last minute because their O&M contractor had left them short.
That's going to cost them more as well, isn't it, in having to do it in that sort of...
Absolutely. Procuring something at the last minute, whether it's a contractor to carry out a job, whether it's the supply of a piece of machinery, or whether it's your insurances, will always cost you more. The actual opportunity for O&M contractors to provide this cover is just depleted to the point at which I would imagine that most O&M contractors offering their services to authorities after the end of a PFI deal will not be offering them insurance. We have dealt with clients who have been in this situation. There are ways and means to begin to, as I would say, pick up the pieces and understand what the risks of the asset are that you've taken over, and to begin to formulate a strategy towards developing insurance. As I said, we're dealing with plants that are at the end of their lives, but they do actually need to continue to operate until a more permanent solution is found. And in a lot of cases, people have underestimated the amount of time it takes to develop an EFW project. Even local authorities struggle with the day-to-day challenges that a typical bioenergy project would have: financing, permitting, planning, which always surprises me when I hear that local authorities struggle with planning. You know, it is the nature of the beast. And if you haven't planned well enough in advance for the end of your bioenergy plant's lifespan, then yeah, you could be left holding vast amounts of waste that you have nowhere to dispose of other than a costly landfill or private gate fee option.
I agree exactly what you said, especially on the planning aspect. I'm amazed by how many local authorities agree a deal for a plant and then turn it down in the planning. It doesn't make sense to me. More recently, there's been more delays to facilities that have been delivered, but mainly because they're probably not being developed by local authorities and they've got to get feedstock deals in place. But insurances obviously has to cover these delays. Is the problems with insurance, is that part of the slowdown, or is it all one big ball rolling along?
As with everything else, the insurance costs are rising, and that will impact the financial model of any project in the same way that the cost of steel rising, the cost of other materials, the cost of contractor, the EPC prices are rising too. I think insurance sits in amongst that, as with everything else. The one challenge probably to development is the attitude of investors. Ian Jones of WKE pointed to this on one of your more recent podcasts, where he said investors need to start thinking long term. I think also investors need to accept that they are taking a commercial risk. They are taking the commercial benefits from that if that risk pays off. The hope that we're seeing from some investors at the moment, which is that insurance can step in for every element of risk and that they can totally de-risk a project, is proving very difficult. We're getting a lot of pressure on developers from their investors, from their lenders, trying to seek insurance products or insurance coverage that goes way beyond what's commercially achievable, because, you know, ultimately, the insurer isn't going to step in and say, no, that's great, I'll take on all this commercial risk and pay out, but you can keep all the benefits if it all works out okay. Insurers aren't going to do that, unfortunately. There are lots of innovative products. There are lots of comprehensive coverages that are available. In the past, we've done things like performance guarantees, which are more of a technology guarantee product. We've done permitting insurances in case a plant struggles in permitting. But, you know, these insurances are very expensive and they are very complex to place. And certain lenders need to understand that there comes a point when a developer can only achieve so much from the insurance market. This is something we have seen before in the early phases of the biomass development. Before the rocks came to an end, we had a lot of lenders advisors who had come from the renewable sector, so they were used to seeing a vast array of coverages which were suited very much to a wind and solar project.
And obviously, one of the hot topics I'd say now is carbon capture. Every energy from waste operator seems to be involved in some sort of projects at some sort of scale. When it comes to the insurance for these, how complicated? I mean, it's simpler than a gasification form of project, isn't it? How do you tackle something that hasn't really been done so far?
We treat it very much like any other new piece of technology. Do we have a pilot plant? Do we have some operational data from that pilot plant to demonstrate what's going on? It's very much a case of sitting down with the insurer, with the owner/developer, and discussing the risk in detail. A lot of our plants, in terms of the clients that we handle, are looking at developing carbon capture facilities. We do seem to have a lot of plants, just by chance, that sit on HyNet or will ultimately connect into HyNet. So there's been a lot of activity in the sort of Mersey estuary area for us. And as the projects develop, we'll begin to see more of an understanding of what the risks are. on face value, I think insurers are probably a lot more comfortable with the idea than they are with the front end piece, the EFW plant that's producing the carbon. So there will be some work to do in terms of getting insurers comfortable with the risk, but I believe it's something that should be relatively straightforward to do, and we are going to be doing a lot of it in the next couple of years.
And I think the waste sector is never usually the fastest moving sector, so I think maybe you and the waste sector and the insurance sector get on quite well.
Yeah, unfortunately they don't. Because when you have a provider who's requiring a large amount of your capital from you and not giving you much, I think there is always a strained relationship in some ways, especially operators who've had a loss and insurers have come in and they've seen how the process works. You know, relationships can be better. I've got to say, a lot of insurers do get committed to a plant. They want to see the plant succeed as much as anyone else, so it doesn't result in a claim, but they'd also like to do it because, yeah, they've worked very closely with the project team and they're supportive of the project.
You touched on the feedstock stuff earlier. That is the problem, I guess, for a lot of these plants, if it's the biomass feedstock or if it's the waste feedstock. You mentioned the issues with hand grenades found in feedstock, for one. I'd say more lithium batteries and laughing gas canisters have been the bigger issues that people have talked about lurking in feedstock. But are you seeing more claims for these sort of things? And if so, what can be done?
Yeah, lithium batteries are absolutely the biggest concern for insurers in the sector. Not only that, they are heavily involved in battery schemes as well. They see what goes wrong with lithium, unfortunately. It is actually very hard to determine when a lithium battery has been the ultimate cause. Because when a fire starts, usually it might be so the lithium battery might be contained in a disposable vape. And obviously that disposable vape is the size of a large pen. And once a fire takes hold in a waste pile, it would obviously be very, very difficult to actually try and find the cause. So there are a lot of fires, and quite often, and what has been in my experience, is that we reach a position where we know that there was an ignition and we can't be 100% sure what's caused it, but we have a high level of confidence that it will have been a lithium-type battery event. I think what we see a lot more of as well are incidences that occur in the waste handling facilities, so shredders, conveyors, etc., where it's a lot more easy to pinpoint those types of risks. Usually, because the market is so tough at the moment, we're talking a standard policy excess of about £500,000. A fire in a conveyor caused by a lithium ion battery just isn't actually hitting the claim, because simply the systems are responding, plants are able to shut down their conveyors, put out the fire before it grows into anything significant. But at the same time, there's no insurance to cover the losses in terms of replacing conveyor bands, servicing shredder teeth, etc., because the deductibles are so high. It's very much focused on how the waste is treated. Insurers are very interested in people's fuel reception processes, their fuel inspections, their sampling techniques.
We talked a bit about the renewals in the insurance sector, but are you dealing with many inquiries now for new projects in the waste sector? Maybe mainly more in the waste sector, I'd say, as the bioenergy sector seems to have moved more to sales of the plants. But then I guess you could also come in when a new buyer comes in. Is that kind of the market?
Yeah, I mean, we are working on a variety of projects at the moment. So we do get involved in acquisitions, sales as well, unfortunately. But every now and again, we get very lucky and we are working with a sale to from an existing client to another existing client. We are very focused on our renewable operational markets. We now have a number of portfolios and a number of standalone single clients who we now renew on an annual basis. And we have been picking up more and more of those. But construction is still a key part of the sector. So we have three plants at least that are making slow but definite progress towards a financial close. I do think that they will probably be some of the last that we do for EFW at least.
It's really positive. You say three projects there close to financial close, because obviously only one, the Encyclist one, made it to financial close last year. So it's promising that there's more coming. I wanted to ask you about, I've seen, and I've spoken to people on this podcast about gasification plants. Some people are like, I don't want to touch gasification anymore. But they've gone through a bit of a mini revival in terms of both planning applications and interests in projects. But they've had a bad press in the past. So I'm guessing that would mean more expensive in terms of insurance throughout the project. What do you think?
We do have quite a bit of gasifier experience. We have worked, I would say, with most of the major gasifier operators, the main exclusion to that being the waste management companies, the Veolias, for example, who've had their own challenges, of course. We've never worked with them because they have a vast fleet of collection vehicles, transfer stations, sorting stations, all that sort of stuff. You know, we are a very much a commercial-grade, merchant-grade centred business, i.e. power generation, rather than waste collection and waste sorting. We've definitely had our gasifier experience. It's been very gratifying to see some of our clients who've worked for years to get their plants up to a much better level of operation. As insurance providers, we're not necessarily sort of there for the deep levels of work, because ultimately these are improvement and performance related discussions. But through the meetings that we have with site, we do learn about the struggles and the strains that go on to actually eke out this performance out of those facilities. And it is really gratifying to see when those teams actually have that success and are able to deliver improved performance. Insurers' view of gasifiers is still very concerning. And their concern is, okay, it's a gasifier, it's going to have technical issues. Some of those issues may result in claims. There's going to be all sorts of extensions. One might think that an extension is great for an insurer because it gets them more money. Usually it actually means that they're having to extend the period of time that they are on risk at a time when usually the plant is at its most exposed. There's physically as much of the construction is finished as possible. Usually we've hit mechanical completion. We're at a point when everything is active, everything's live and activated. So all the opportunities for things to catch fire, for things to go wrong, are increased. So insurers, although they do charge a lot for their extensions, they don't like giving them, because effectively this is the point at which everything can go wrong and they get very, very edgy. So unfortunately, the experience for insurers of gasifiers has always been very negative. High risk of loss, mechanical issues, lengthy extensions. We've seen multi-year extensions because the gasification process just couldn't be perfected. We've had to negotiate very complex operational policies that take into account that the plant has actually not been fully operationally taken over. They're still tinkering with it. I think to summarise, insurers are always going to have reservations about dealing with gasifiers. But as we sort of move into a new generation of gasification technologies that are more focused on molecules rather than combustion, the insurer is concerned about bringing those concerns to the client and generating the information in order to actually deliver something. Gasifiers can be insured. We have insured them. We've insured them into construction. It's been a while since I've seen one in construction, but with the move to molecules, I'm sure I'm going to be seeing more in the future.
I wanted to ask you a general thing about the policy development in the UK. Obviously, we've had all the stuff with Steve Barclay and the moratorium on environmental permits being handed out. Does, from an insurance point of view, if you see stories on the BBC and The Guardian about the government getting nervy about plants, does that start worrying you from your insurance point of view?
It's only in The Guardian, definitely not, because no insurer reads The Guardian. I'm kidding, I'm sure there are some. But ultimately, an insurer is focused on a risk of physical loss or damage. So whether or not a plant gets a permit is not an issue for them, really. If a plant physically were to get to commissioning but not be able to commission because their environmental permit hadn't been granted, the insurer isn't going to be on the hook for that. Insurers will look at it. They will maybe think, oh, do I want to work on this project? Do I want to commit the amount of time that it will take to fully review all the information, carry out my pricing activities? So these are deep analysis of the actual risk at site, at location, risk of technology, all that sort of stuff. Do I want to commit all this time and then find that they don't get the permit and they fall foul? That would probably be the one area that most operational and construction insurers would have a bit of an intake of breath. I think probably the only people that really would be looking in their papers and seeing the development of this would be, there's a small group of insurers that offer permitting insurances. So these are insurances that are taken out much earlier in the development phase. So I'm presuming that a certain plant impacted by that probably wouldn't have purchased that insurance, but can be purchased. It's quite difficult to obtain. It's quite costly to obtain, but yet you can purchase insurance for that in some cases. But unfortunately, the reality is now that the government has started to behave in the way that they've behaved for however long they're still in power, the insurers will react and say, well, we're not going to give you this cover at the moment, because obviously, you know, the government have shown a rather poor way of handling this, and this creates a risk environment where we don't want to offer the cover. Insurers like stability, they don't like instability.
Now, Ian, that sort of brings us to the end. So the final question that I ask everyone on The Burning Issue is, what's the question I should have asked you? And more importantly, how would you have answered it?
Well, I guess if I was being cheeky, I'd say, why is it that Gallagher's is definitely the best insurance broker for you to use? I think a far more relevant and helpful subject is, how are we going to insure waste molecules? This is still very much a sector in its early phases of development. So we are working now with risks in the US, Europe and the UK, who are going through their final detailed feed, initial finance negotiations, etc., and hoping to be starting on their projects in the next 12 to 18 months. And the insurance for the sector is still very much in its early phases. Waste molecules requires quite a detailed approach to develop an insurance program. It's very much focused on a very early engagement with the project by the insurance broker, developing again an early relationship with the insurers, so that the project is developed from start to finish with insurance in mind. Effectively, what we're trying to do is what we successfully did in the EFW world, which is to build insurance into the core fundamentals of the project from day one. Effectively, waste to molecules is challenging. We have in some ways, we have a waste sector at the front end, and we've got an energy sector, i.e. oil and gas, petrochemicals, at the other end. And there are two very different ways of handling insurances and two different sets of standards. So what we've been doing is developing key relationships with insurers that are interested in the waste molecule sector, but also who have active operational teams who are willing to work with a construction team. So we have a small pool of insurers who are looking to work with us on these new projects and who effectively can commit both their operational and their construction team into the risk discussions. And we've got to bear in mind that the operational world here is a traditionally oil and gas based sector. They're used to very big facilities. You don't build a small oil refinery. So they are very much used to operating in a different kind of environment. And they are going to go through certain growing pains as they come into this sector.
I agree with you. The waste to molecule element's really exciting, and the SAF plants particularly, because they're going to obviously need the same, especially if they're waste to SAF, they're going to need the same feedstock that the last few energy from waste plants are competing for. So with the government obviously talking about its support earlier this month, coming out with different funding mechanisms, they're definitely going to get built. So let's hope they all work and it all works out for you.
We know that we're on the cusp of another significant development in the bioenergy sector. Technology is technology. We're not an insurer. We're not taking on the risk. We are providing a consultancy and placement service, effectively. So we will look at any project that comes along and try and advise a client as best we can. We've seen some very traditional type projects, sort of think pyrolysis projects that have been kicking around for years didn't quite have the commercial desirability. But we're also seeing much more complex projects as well. It's a very interesting time to be in the industry, although we're on the peripheries as a service provider rather than a developer, but it will be an interesting experience.
That's a great way to end it in. I think there's interesting times ahead, positive as well. Ian, obviously people can find you on the internet via LinkedIn and the other websites and things, so if they want to get in contact with you, I'd urge them to do that. But I'd also like to thank you so much for giving up your time.
Thank you for having me on the show. It's always interesting to talk about insurance. It's not necessarily something that everyone thinks of for the sector, but it's ultimately an important part of any project, whether it's getting the project built or whether or not it's keeping the project operating. Unless you're very fortunate and in a position to completely fund a project from equity, you're going to have lenders involved in a project who are going to be demanding and who are going to be pushing you for the insurances.
Thanks again, Ian. All that's left for me to say is thank you very much for listening. If you've liked what you've heard, please share it amongst your networks, either online or in person. It's all really appreciated. And if you want to learn more about the business of energy recovery, go to the website endswasteandbioenergy.com, where you can sign up for our free newsletters or even take out a subscription, if you want. Goodbye.